Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the law of God. Has it been abolished when we come back? Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? It's pretty obvious that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools. They've been banned from our public institutions. They have been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they now teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions. We Americans have made them a part of our national psyche. And this is a very radical change in our political and moral outlook over these past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Now, there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it works automatically. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which is the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. Doesn't cost anything. You can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, let's go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click onto the email machine. And then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the law of Moses. I got a paper here from a fellow named George Cunningham, and I'm just reading off of George's paper over here, and he says that there is a number of concept or ideas out there about the law of God and about how the law of God has been abolished and done away with. It's been nailed to the cross with Jesus. Now, the thing I kind of wondered about, too, was if the law of God has been nailed to the cross with Jesus, shouldn't the penalties be nailed to the cross with Jesus? I mean, there shouldn't be any more penalties for adultery. We shouldn't have AIDS, herpes, and VD. If the law that says thou shalt not commit adultery has been repealed, then there shouldn't be a penalty called AIDS for sexual misconduct, should there? Don't you think God is unfair, having abolished the law and then left the penalties in full force and effect? Kind of reminds me of my daddy one time I came in the house. And my daddy was upset with me. I forgot now what it was, being an old man filled with Alzheimer's now. But, you know, when I was a kid, I could have told you. But I came in the house, and my dad grabbed me And he threw me against the wall. It was his custom. It was his habit. He'd just grab me, and he'd throw me up against the wall. And with sufficient velocity, let me assure you, boys and girls, that when an 11 or 12-year-old kid hits the wall hard enough, he will bounce off of the wall and fall to the floor. I've had that tested on me several times, and every time I bounced off the wall, I fell on the floor. The old dad, he whipped off his belt, and he just beat the living hell out of me. And right away, somebody's going to say, well, no wonder that Gordon's turned out the way he did. He was abused as a child. Oh, come on. I wasn't abused as a child. I learned as a child how to sit down, shut up, and fold my hands. I learned how to say yes, sir, and no, sir. I learned how to speak when I was spoken to and shut up when I was told to. Anyway, that wasn't child abuse. That's something that came along later. You know, back when I was a kid, we didn't have child abuse. Hell, we didn't have social lady. We didn't know what the hell it was. Well, anyway, after old dad got through working me over pretty good, you know, he started reprimanding me for my bad behavior. And I told him, I didn't do it, Dad. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. See? Well, he got to feeling kind of bad about that after I told him about 15 times, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. See? And so he got to be kind of repentant, you know, having just whipped me real bad because I'd done something that now he was having second thoughts about. That, well, maybe the kid didn't actually do that. Maybe this kid ain't near as bad as I thought he was. So anyway, he got to thinking about that, and he said to me, he said, son, have you ever done anything for which, had I found out about it, I would have whipped you? But I didn't find out about it, so I didn't whip you. Boy, that was a hard question. That was a hard, hard question. I mulled that over, and I thought about it long and hard. And I said, well, yeah, maybe there was once when I did something that I should have got whipped for, and I didn't get whipped. And my daddy said, well, now I'm not going to ask you what it was. And I'm not going to whip you for whatever it was that you did that you should have got whipped for, but you didn't. But you got away with it, didn't you? And I said, yeah, I guess I got away with it. He says, okay, this whipping that I just gave you was for that time that you got away with it. Now, I walked away from that, and I mulled that over, and I learned a valuable lesson, and that is, you know, sometimes things happen. Sometimes SH happens, and that was one of those times. But it also demonstrates that there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. And the law of God has built-in penalties. And AIDS, herpes, and VD is the built-in penalty for adultery. You do not need a policeman down at Flo's Whorehouse to give you a ticket when you come out. The penalty is automatic. And the best part about it is you can go to Flo's for many, many times and you never get any. You never get crabs, and you don't get lice, and you don't get AIDS, and you don't get herpes or VD. But then there comes that magic time when you get infected and you've got herpes, see? Or you got some other sexually transmitted diseases, and there's a bunch of them now. Hell, when I was a kid, we were only concerned about one or two. Now you've got to be concerned about a lot of them. And 25%, get this, boys and girls, 25% of high school students, that is people that have not graduated from high school yet, they're still in high school, 25% of them have a sexually transmitted disease. Well, let's hear it for more sex education. By God, you know, we got more sex education than we ever had in this country in our history, and we got more sexually transmitted diseases than we've ever had before. I say, if we could double the amount and the time spent on sex education in public school, we could probably bring that up to 50%. We could probably have half these kids infected with a sexually transmitted disease. I remember when I was a kid, they had a big hue and cry about Jane getting knocked up, and she wasn't even out of high school yet. Well, I graduated in 57, and in 57 they had 305 kids in the graduating class, and only one of them, Vivian Westerman, got knocked up before graduation. One. Just do my arithmetic here. If you take 300 kids, half of them had to be girls. In round numbers, you know, about half of them were girls. That's 150. That's one, Vivian, out of 150. Now, probably, there was 5 or 10 more that we didn't know nothing about. Know what I mean? But they used to keep that under wraps in the old days. But I was pretty well tuned, you know, to all the kids going on. And I pretty well knew who it was that was banging Vivian and who it was banging Jane and Mary over here. You know, word kind of spreads around in school that who you could tap and who you couldn't. And when I was a kid in school, you couldn't tap very many of them, but there was 3 or 4 of them you could. And Vivian was one of them. She was one of the unlucky girls. She got knocked up before graduation. Of course, she had to leave school. Of course, you can't go to school. Today, in America's schools, 10% of the graduating class. Well, 10% of the girls. I guess that'd be more like 20% of the graduating class. 10%, that's the only ones that I know of that can get pregnant. 10% of the class is pregnant. 10%. Now, we got more sex education in public schools and we got more pregnancy than we ever had. In fact, in Houston, Texas, I wrote a piece the other day, they got daycare centers in the public schools so that the girls, you know, when they get knocked up and have a baby, that's no problem. Just keep right on coming to public school and we'll put your kid in the daycare center right down the hall. I don't know. I'd say that was insane, but then, you know, maybe I'm just an old fart and we don't see things eye to eye. But I got a letter here from this guy named George Cunningham, you know, and he said, here are the laws of God. And it was a little better than that. He said, here are the laws of God that have been abolished and done away with. And so I got to looking this up and I went through this and there's 100. Let me give you the right number here. 121, I think it is. Flip over here in my book. 121 places in the New Testament. Oh, yeah, that's right here. 121 times. The law is not abolished, it hasn't been amended, and it hasn't been repealed. 121 times in the New Testament, 48 times in the New Testament are places that are cited off point, not a context, to convince you, to tell you, to lie to you, to deceive you into believing that the law of Moses has been abolished, nailed to the cross, and done away with. And what did George say? He's got 6 of them here. This is what they teach you when you go to church. The law has been abolished and nailed to the cross with Jesus. We're not under the law anymore, meaning we don't practice the law. We only follow part of the law, those being the 10 commandments. The law is divided into several parts, ceremonial, and we keep part of it. The law is for unbelievers, not believers, and only the laws reiterated in the New Testament are to be kept. That's what you learn in church. Now, as a result of that, over the last 50 years or so, keeping in mind that in 1947, in the Dallas public school system, they were teaching the book of John out of the Bible in the public schools. So, there didn't used to be a separation of church and state in this country. There is today, and we have banned the Bible, banned God, and we have banned the Ten Commandments from the public schools. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad. You can make up your own mind. I wouldn't send my kid to a public school. I think there's cheaper, better, faster, easier ways to educate a child than to send them to public school, but then you know that's your choice to make. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I just wanted to let you know that your kid isn't going to be exposed to the Bible in public school. It's been banned. It's outlawed. But it wasn't always that way in this country. And I kind of chided George Cunningham here. He said twice on page 3 over here that practicing the law of God was Christian, and I spent the last program and I pointed out plainly, I never saw that in my life, and I'm an old man, George, and I haven't seen any Christians practicing the Ten Commandments or the law of God. The Ten Commandments are not part of Catholicism. Pedophilia is a part of Catholicism. One-third of the Catholic priests up in Boston are pedophiles. Well, or sodomites. I don't know if there's a difference. Maybe there is. Maybe not all sodomites are pedophiles. And maybe not all pedophiles are sodomites. I don't know. I just know that in Leviticus 18, the penalty for sodomy and the penalty for pedophilia, the penalty for these sex crimes is death. D-E-D, dead. That's from the Bible. It's not from Christian theology now. Christians would loathe killing a pedophile, as evidenced by the Catholic Church. They're not in favor of killing pedophiles. They transfer pedophiles to the Vatican. That's the way they deal with pedophilia in the Catholic Church. And I'm sure that George here probably is not, this is George Cunningham, not, probably not a Catholic, but he says he's a Christian, or at least he alleges. I don't mean to call you names, George. Maybe you're not a Christian. I just thought I'd chide you a little bit for that, because I can't find it anywhere. I haven't found any Christians practicing the Ten Commandments. Now, last time I was telling you that there was a few of these crimes, like integration, Christmas, pork, Easter, and interracial marriage. And I stopped last time on interracial marriage, which was number 5. I've got 81 of these. 82. 82. 82 crimes out of 133 laws. Now write this down, boys and girls. Let's see if we can do a little arithmetic. In the Bible, there are 133 subject matters of law. You know, like adultery. Adultery. Now, adultery has some statutes. Sodomy is an adultery crime. Bestiality is an adultery crime. Pedophilia, that is an adultery crime. See? And so, under adultery, there are several statutes that regulate this thing called sexual relations. Now, don't want you to think that I'm an old fart and I don't appreciate sex. You know, if God made anything better than a pig to eat, he kept it for himself. And sex is right behind pig. It was a hell of a good invention. I don't know what day of the week he invented sex on, but whatever day he did a good job. It was a hell of an invention. And I really like sex, and I think if there's anything better than sex, God must have kept it for himself. But, like pig, he regulated it. Now, it's kind of like driving your automobile. See, you got this automobile out here, and it's a hell of a neat invention, but there are regulations that go along with it. As long as there was just Adam and Eve in the garden, they didn't need very many laws concerning sex. You know, it was after they got a bunch of people out here that we had to come up with some rules over here. Tom, that's my wife, keep your hands off her, you know. So God came along and he says, well, thou shalt not commit adultery. That is, you know, you got your wife and Bob's got his wife, and so let's be satisfied with our wives. And then somebody came up with wife swapping. They said, well, that sounds like a heck of a good idea. Wife swapping. Now, you'd think somebody in church, you know, some clergy guy over here would get up in the pulpit one Sunday and say, hey, boys and girls, let me explain to you Leviticus chapter 18 and the sex laws over here that come from God. I never heard that. Of course, I never went to church very much either, but I tried to avoid church as much as possible. Now, of course, I've been to church. I don't want to lead you astray here. I've been to church quite a few times. And there are some churches out there, I am sure, that will teach you concerning Leviticus 18, or will teach you concerning the Sabbath, etc. Now, let's see if we can put it all together. Will those churches teach you all 133 of those laws? Mull that one over a little bit. Because the Seventh-day Adventists, they get hot and heavy on Sabbath. But they're not very hot and heavy on holy days. Know what I mean? In other words, they kind of pick and choose. They do some laws, but they don't do all of the laws. And so I got to looking them up, and I found out that here in America, out of 133, we don't practice 82. So I put under 82 under my 133, and I get 51. Is that about right? Yeah, 51. We still practice 51 of God's laws, and we don't practice, that is, we violate 82 as a society, as a nation. And we're beginning to see some results come in. Now, remember I told you, when I was a kid, we practiced the Sabbath. today in America, we don't. So now we're a nation of Sabbath breakers, whereas before we were a nation of Sabbath keepers. No, no, you Advents are going to write me a letter and say, no. Americans never did practice the Sabbath. No, they practiced the Sabbath, they just didn't do it on Saturday. But we practiced the Sabbath. Now, today we not only don't practice the Sabbath on Saturday, we don't practice the Sabbath, period. We're open for business. America is open for business 24/7, every day. Now, that's only one out of 133. So you can take the Sabbath, and that leaves you 132. Now, you've heard me mention 759. Now, if you take a look at those 133 subject matters or titles of law, they're regulated by 759 statutes. Now, I know some Jewish guy is going to write me a letter and says, no, there's 613. Okay. The Jews sat down, they counted them up, and they got 613. Now, I sat down, I sat down, and I counted them up, and I got 759. So, I mean, you know, you can sit there and argue over 613 and 759, but I'm the guy that's right because I sat there and I read the whole scripture and I codified it. And furthermore, I wrote a book and I can cite every one of them and I can cite every penalty for them. And as I pointed out, you know, I'm a crummy plumber. Didn't go to seminary, and thank God I didn't get burdened with that kind of a chain and ball. And I was mentioning this guy, Kent Hovind. Now, remember, last time, Kent Hovind, he couldn't find interracial marriage. He couldn't find any laws. He couldn't find anything in the Bible opposed to interracial marriage. And so I suggested Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 11, and Ezra 10:10 for two out of about eight statutes that prohibit prohibition against interracial marriage. But that's the tip of the iceberg. Number 6 is unjust weights and balances. In Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36... it tells you not to have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16 tell you the same thing. And those two statutes come from thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not steal. And so we Americans use Federal Reserve notes and you Englishmen use pounds and you have paper money. You have unjust weights and balances. The only purpose for paper money is to steal. There's no other intelligent, logical purpose for paper money than to steal, which violates that commandment that says thou shalt not steal. I just thought I'd share that one with you. Franklin Roosevelt came along. Actually, it was Woodrow Wilson and the Federal Reserve that came up with the Federal Reserve idea back in 1913. But Franklin Roosevelt really put it into operation when he banned gold and pulled all the gold off the market so that it took away from you your choice. Well, you still had silver, and then Lyndon Johnson came along in 1964 and took your silver coin out of circulation, which left you with just fiat paper currency. Fortunately, boys and girls, we have always had available to us gold and silver coin. We could get South African Krugerrands. We could use junk silver. We've always had money available to us. Today, we've got a Treasury Department. We've got a mint now in West Point, New York that's minting gold and silver coins here in the United States. You Canadians have your gold and silver coins and Australians, you know. There are several countries around the world now that are minting gold and silver coins. So don't sit there and say, well, we don't have gold and silver. It's probably true that you don't know how to use it even if you had it, but unjust weights and balances is a crime. Now, we have debt. Oh, my God, do we have debt. The violation of this law on just weights and balances is debt. And, boy, we've got a bunch of it. Now, I'm happy to report to you that I don't have any debt at all. Zero, zilch, none, nada. Now, in case you think that I was always a righteous Rosie, let me tell you, I used to have 28 credit cards in my pocket, and I maxed them all out one time, and I couldn't pay the $12,000 that I owed on them. And it woke me up one day, and I said, you know, I can't handle credit. I can't handle credit cards. I was a credit card junkie. I woke up one day, it's worse than alcohol. Hell, I'd rather die. I kick cigarettes easier than I kick credit cards. Hell, I kicked whiskey a hell of a lot easier than the credit cards and the credit from the bank. They tell you, you know, that kicking cigarettes is like kicking heroin. Oh, no, it didn't. Kicking credit cards is 10 times worse than cigarettes and heroin combined. And I'm telling you, I'm a recovering credit holic. I couldn't handle it. So I just got rid of it, and I went off cold turkey, and I don't practice credit anymore. And I got onto this thing of using just weights and balances. That is gold and silver coin. God, it works like a shot. I thought God was stupid and didn't give us enough gold in the world to handle all the trade, commerce, business, and industry that goes on. I found out that's not true. I don't know who promotes that kind of crap, but somebody came up with that idea. I remember when I was a kid in high school, for crying out loud, they said, well, the reason we've got to have paper money is that there's not enough gold and silver in the world to conduct all of the trade, commerce, business, and industry. I'll tell you who I think it was. I think it was our ag teacher in Ferndale High School. I think that's the guy that told us that. He just as dumb as a box of rocks. That's not true. Now, you might believe that, but it's a bunch of crap. And furthermore, what do you care? What do you care? I've got all the gold and silver I'm entitled to, and if all the rest of the people in the world want to use paper, what do I care? It's no skin off my back, and it's no skin off yours either. You can use gold and silver in the morning. There's plenty of it out there. My wife just went to town the other day, and she bought some silver, and shucks, as far as I know, old Charlie has got more. I don't think she bought him out. There's still some more there. And if you want to buy, sell, and trade and use just weights and balances, you can do it just like I do. And then there's a benefit that comes from that. And let me just tell you what that benefit is. The benefit is debt-free and the ownership of property. Instead of an equitable interest in your house, you'll actually own it free and clear. It's a wild new concept. Don't make payments on your house. Own the damn thing free and clear. Don't make payments on your car. Own the car free and clear. Don't make payments, own it. Property versus equitable interest. I know it's a strange, a foreign and alien doctrine to American ears. Hell, it's probably just as foreign and alien to you Australians and New Zealanders, but I just wanted to share it with you because it came right out of the Bible, called Just Weights and Balances. And then there's witchcraft. Hell, our president practices witchcraft. Did you know that? We elected a president from skull and bones. We got an organization over here in the United States called a think tank. It's a policy think tank called Skull and Bones from Yale. You've got it over in England. You don't call it Skull and Bones. You got a name for it over there. I forgot the name of your outfit. And you Australians, you got one down there in New Zealand. Every country in the world has its think tank. Here in America, it's called Skull and Bones. And we elected our president right out of Skull and Bones, and they practice witchcraft there. They don't even hide it. And our president's religious. Well, what could you expect? Witches are religious people. Witchcraft is a religion. Witchcraft. It's a religion. And our president is a warlock. But he's also a Christian, and the people that that elected him to office are Christians. That's why I mentioned to you in the last program, I said, you don't want to blame anybody, but the Christians are running the world. The Christians are in control of nuclear weapons. It's the Christians over here that put our president, a witch, into office. And that president over there, you know, he's a Christian. A Christian who practices witchcraft. But then witchcraft and Christianity go together like a horse and carriage. Always has. Always will. Christianity doesn't have anything to do with the Bible. That's why I operate a law school. See, it used to be in this country, it's kind of a wild and crazy idea, but did you know when an incoming freshman to the Harvard Law School, before 1942, they abolished this in 1942, but prior to World War II, what do you think were the first two books that an incoming freshman would have to read coming into law school at the Harvard Law School? First two books. First two. Blackstone's Commentaries and the Book of Hebrews. The Book of Hebrews. From the Bible, for crying out loud. Can you believe that? Boys and girls, we didn't practice separation of church and state until after World War II. In the first 150 years of our existence, we practiced the Bible. We practiced the Ten Commandments in this country. We incorporated those right into our governmental institutions. We taught the Book of John in the Dallas Public Schools in 1947. Now, it's true, we have banished the Bible. We have thrown God and the Bible and the Ten Commandments out of our public schools. I don't deny it. I'm just asking the question, suggesting, do you think that was such a good idea? If you think that was a great idea, we needed to ban religion in our public schools, well then, do you think that you should send your children to public school? I mean, my dad had a little different take on sex education. See, today, they have sex education in the public school. My dad, he said, what we need to do, when you're 16 years old, we're going to take you down to the whorehouse and teach you sex. That's the way we used to do it when I was a kid. Your dad would take you down to Flo's whorehouse, and one of Flo's girls would break you in. That's where we got sex education. I'll tell you, you get a better sex education from a whore in a whorehouse than you will in public school. They never taught us sodomy and bestiality in a whorehouse. Let me tell you. We learned how to deal with women, what they were for. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here. Halfway point, because half the people in the country don't agree with me. So I need to remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And that the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Keep in mind, however, that these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the opinions and beliefs of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information, remember the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're back. We're talking about the law of Moses. Has it been abolished and done away with? I just mentioned that sex education, not for all kids, you know. I don't want to tell you that, you know, 50 or 75 years ago, all children learned sex education down at Flo's Whorehouse. That was just my dad's idea. My dad and Ernie Yates, they both believed that the best place to get a sex education was from a professional. today we Americans believe in our professionals. So we go to professionals like doctors for our health problems and bankers for our banking problems and lawyers for our legal problems. Well, hell, you know, in the old days they used to believe in professionals, and so they'd take you down to the local whorehouse and have one of the girls teach you sex and sex education. Today we brought it right into our public schools. Public schools. Only there they teach you alternative lifestyles. They teach you abortion. I never learned that at Flo's. They teach you bestiality. I never learned that at Flo's. They teach you sodomy in public schools. I never learned that down at the whorehouse. And I suspect that that's why Jesus had kinder words for whores than he ever had for sodomites, lawyers, bankers, or preachers. Now, that's just my conclusion on the matter. Not that he was advocating whoredom. And there are many statutes that prohibit whores, whoredom. It's just that if you had to make a choice, you know, between sin A and sin B, sin A is probably better. Now, there's sodomy, abortion, adultery. Now, abortion, that's a good one. Half the people in America practice abortion. Did you know that? Or believe in it. At least that's what the polls tell us. The polls. Now, we have this thing of right to life, and then we have right to choose. Notice that we have rights. That's a buzzword. See, we don't want to turn you off, and so we come up. We just advocate. We are all for rights. See, that's a buzzword here in this country, and so it's your right to choose. You see, and so one woman comes along and says, "Well, I'm going to choose an abortion." Another woman comes along and says, "Oh no, you should choose right to life." And so we got a lot of babies that are unwanted. Now, I'm from an old school. I can remember my granny, and my granny raised seven children. She had seven babies. Can you believe that? Seven. Big family. And she raised seven children. And then, during the Depression years, she raised about another seven. I lost track of them all, but there was me, my cousin Carol Ann, Kathleen, and several more. See, we didn't have social lady back in the olden days, and so we had orphanages. I mean, if a kid didn't have any other place to go in the whole wide world, there was an orphanage, which was the last place in the world that you'd want to send a kid. And so if there was any way that you could get around that orphanage over there, you'd send them over to Aunt Betty, or you'd send them to Uncle Buster, or to Grandma, or any place. Hell, you'd give them to a neighbor before you'd send them to an orphanage. But anyway, my grandmother, she raised another six or seven kids on top of that, or ten, I don't know how many it was a bunch. And she didn't think anything about that. Just normal, just, you know. And she wasn't the only one. I know Mrs. Birchfield raised a couple, Mrs., you know, all these old ladies out here that were raising grandkids and or somebody else's kid, because during the Depression years, you know, there were people, you know, that just didn't have the means to take care of their own kids. That's what breaks the game. And so they put them out, you know. But abortion was just looked upon as, it was worse than AIDS, herpes, and VD. Abortion was just the lowest scum that you could dredge up. Just unheard of. Well, today, my daughter came to me, not today, but, you know, she came to me, and today, this line of thinking runs around. My daughter said, "Well, it's just useless tissue." She went to college. Went to college, came back, and she preached me a sermon. She said, "You know, it's just useless tissue. It's like your appendix." Boys and girls, I did not know that your appendix was useless tissue. I didn't know that. There's a bunch of people out there that believe that, and they have their appendix cut out, and then it impairs their immune system. They wonder why they're sick and weak and undernourished puny runts. But then, you know, they got rid of that useless tissue called an appendix. And so there's people now today that believe that an abortion is just useless tissue, and that, you know, it's just a practice that we use today for birth control came from a woman named Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger. That's another story for another day. But anyway, that's abortion. Well, abortion is prohibited in the Bible. I don't know if you knew that or not. But in Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5, it's called passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. And when you chase that out, you find that we today practice the same thing. Half of us, half of Americans practice abortion or believe in it. Called passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. That's a capital felony. It's punishable just like murder by death. It has a capital felony. It's a capital crime. Abortion. My daughter informed me that it was just a birth control. One of my daughters. They don't all think that way, but one of them does. And then we're voters in this country, and we practice voting, and it's a violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. We practice usury in this country. That is, we buy things and we pay interest. And we lend money upon interest. That's a violation of Exodus 22, verses 25 through 27. We practice adultery in this country. That's a violation of Exodus 20, verse 14. We eat blood in this country, but not as a general rule. And so I put an asterisk by this law. There's a law in Leviticus 7, verses 26 and 27. It says, you shall eat no manner of fat, and you shall eat nothing with the blood in it. Now, we still do practice bloodletting. In other words, when we butcher our stock in this country, we cut their throats and we bleed them. And Jewish people go a step further. They kasher it. I thought it was koshering, but somebody said the other day, kasher. I came home one day and I told my granny that we were studying. She said, what'd you learn in school today? I said, learned about the Caribbean Sea, or the Caribbean Ocean, the Caribbean Sea. And my grandmother just went ballistic on me. That's Caribbean, Caribbean. I don't know, kasher, kosher, potato, potato. I don't know exactly what you call it over here, but anyway, you put a little salt in the pan, stick your meat in the pan, and the blood comes out. You know, some people carry this to extremes. We're kind of extremists here. Here, you know, we kosher all of our meat here too. We like to get all the blood out of it, and that's because there's an instruction here in the Bible. In fact, there's not a instruction, there's seven instructions. The word blood, don't eat blood, appears seven times. I wondered if that was important. There's only one place in the Bible that tells you about divorce. There's only one divorce statute, but there's seven blood statutes. And I thought, I wonder if he told us seven times not to eat blood because that's more important than divorce. Kind of stuck in my mind that way, so I just thought I'd share that with you. Now, a lot of people from Eastern Europe came over here, really poor people, and I got to tell you this story because I used to work for a Catholic guy. His name was Rocha, Frank Rocha. In fact, almost all the people you know that were in the dairy business up in the Yale River Valley, they were either Italians or Portuguese. Not all. There were some Danes and Norwegians and a couple others, but you know, most of them were Catholics. They were from Portugal or Spain or Italy or someplace. And so, anyway, they were Christian. And they had some real Christian customs. Well, anyway, Tony Rocha, this is Frank's brother, we were butchering pigs. And so old Dedini came over and he shot this pig in the head and the pig falls down to the floor, you see. And so they reach over and turn the pig into the gutter. See, in a dairy barn, there's this gutter that runs down behind the cows to collect the manure and the urine, see, and then you haul that out. Well, after you've cleaned the barn, see, up at this end of the barn where you don't put cows, there's a gutter up there where you do the butchering. And it's just part of the regular gutter, but, you know, you just don't use that up there because it's just kind of nasty. So anyway, they flipped this pig around and they stuck it. That means they cut the pig's throat to bleed it. Old Tony runs over, grabs his coffee cut, sticks it underneath this pig's throat and fills his cup with blood. See? And then he's drinking this blood. You know, I'm just a poor white kid over here. I almost lost my breakfast watching this guy drinking warm blood fresh out of the pig. So I asked Frank about that. I said, Frank, my God, that's really gross, you know. And Frank said, well, he said, yeah, that is pretty gross, and I wouldn't drink pig's blood. I mean, this guy's a Catholic, and he wouldn't drink pig's blood. And I didn't think there was much that a Catholic wouldn't do, but anyway, I guess there is a couple things, and that's one of them right there. And so anyway, he said, well, where I come from in the Azores, he was a Portuguese guy, and he's from the Azores, and he said, you know, it's very poor over there. Unemployment's high, people are poor. And you have to use everything. And so they make blood sausage. And in Eastern Europe, they made blood sausage. And they drink that blood. Or it coagulates, and then they fry it up and they eat it. Now today, you know, people don't think much about eating pig or rats or, you know, they teach, you know, when you go into the army, hell, you know, if things really get bad, you can eat maggots and grubs and worms and all kinds of things. I just wanted to share with you, God told you not to eat that kind of stuff. And if you do, then, you know, you shouldn't be surprised if you get some kind of disease. Some kind of disease. And boy, there's a lot of diseases. In fact, there's a book called the Desk Reference Book in your doctor's office, and it has all the diseases in it. Diseases. And I was talking to old Lester one time, and he said, yeah, there's about 450 of these diseases. And these diseases, he explained to me, are symptoms. And he said, you know, one guy comes in here and his symptom is his eyes are running and he's got allergies. And another guy comes in here and his symptoms is he's got cancer. Another guy comes in, he's got muscular dystrophy. Another guy. And so what we do is we label these symptoms and these different symptoms. And oftentimes you can't tell the symptoms apart. You know, what's the symptoms of flu and a cold? Well, you know, you get a stuffy nose and you're coughing and hacking and wheezing and your nose is plugged up and your eyes are running, you know. So, or you got diarrhea or something like that. Well, look, there's lots of symptoms, you know. These are symptoms, and then we hang labels on these diseases. Your body is out of sorts, they used to say. Your body's out of sorts. So God comes along and he gives you, and I think there's, on these health laws, 18 health laws. And he says, now here's what you do, here's what you don't do. And this blood thing is one of them. Now, right with that, he tells you not to eat fat. That's Leviticus 3, verse 17. He says, don't eat fat and don't eat blood. Now, we Americans over here eat lots of fat. And we have the highest incidence of cardiovascular disease in the world. Highest incidence of cardiovascular disease, and we get it from eating fat. We pasteurize our milk, kill the enzyme that you have to digest the cream in the milk. So that fat goes right through your stomach lining and then it lodges in your arteries. There's a story that goes with that, you know, called atherosclerosis, and describes, you know, how this fat doesn't dissolve and doesn't digest. And animal fat, you know, they call it cholesterol, and you got good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. God, you know, he's a lot simpler than that. He doesn't get real technical. He just says, hey, don't eat fat, don't eat blood. Now, the reason I'm taking a little time here to cover some of these, I got 82 of these. I'm not going to bore you with 82, you know, rest assured. I just wanted to run through a few of them over here and point out to you that we Americans practice integration, Christmas, pork, Easter, interracial marriage, unjust weights and balances, witchcraft, sodomy, abortion, adultery, usury, voting, blood and fat. And that's the first 14. We violate all those laws every day of the week. Think nothing about it. Boys and girls, do you honest to God believe you can break those laws and never suffer a penalty? You know, there's a cause and effect relationship from everything that you do. You go out and vote and you get George Bush. I didn't vote and I still got George Bush, but if the rest of you guys, you know, would practice the law of God, we might get something a little better than that. I mean, you know, God might be ticked off at us, but you know, if enough of us quit voting, you know, we'd stop encouraging those guys. Now, there's a bumper sticker runs around that says, don't vote, it just encourages them. Well, I couldn't agree with it more. If nobody in America voted, have you ever thought about that? If nobody voted, how would we elect a president? If everybody in this country obeyed the laws of God, do you know that we would have a different government than we have today? Did you know that if everybody in this country obeyed the laws of God, it wouldn't even take everybody. I mean, if just half the people, you'd have different institutions. Now, do you know you wouldn't have the kinds of institutions that you have today? Let's just carry it out to its ultimate and just pretend that everybody in the country is a George Gordon, and nobody in the country has any insurance. Now, I've got a confession. I don't have any fire insurance on my house. I don't have any health insurance. I don't have any auto insurance. I mean, I don't practice insurance. I practice strict liability, which is the biblical methodology for handling this thing that normal people call insurance. Christians practice insurance. I never heard of a Christian that wouldn't buy insurance. Have you? Now, there might be some out there. I don't know, but I haven't heard of any. Now, I'm not a Christian. I guess you could kind of figure that out. I mean, I don't do any of these things that Christians do. Christians practice integration. Christians practice Christmas. Christians practice pork. Christians practice Easter. Christians practice interracial marriage. Christians practice unjust weights and balances. I mean, Christians use Federal Reserve notes and practice usury and buy houses and pay interest. And they don't think anything about it. So when I come to you and I say, well, I'm not one of those, and I'm selling a different product, I said, well, what do you think would happen if everybody in America did that? I mean, if everybody in America practiced the laws of Moses instead of practicing Christian ideology and philosophy, there wouldn't be any insurance companies. None. Zero. Well, then how would that work out? When your house burns down, you'd build another one. You'd have to be responsible. What it would boil down to is, instead of somebody coming along, I remember one time I was in the manufacturing business, and about every 6 months this guy used to come through our factory. I had fire insurance. I used to have insurance. I had health insurance and fire insurance and auto insurance and all these insurances. This guy used to come through and inspect my factory. He was kind of like Mother Superior, you know, coming around and doing a short arm inspection. And then he'd come back and he'd have 10 or 15 things. He'd say, fix these 10 or 15 things and we won't raise your fire insurance premium. So gosh, we'd get real busy and run around, pick up all the rags and clean up and do all these things. He'd come back and redo things. You know, he'd come back and reinspect so that we wouldn't have to pay higher fire insurance premiums. Well, how many people have fires in Boise, Idaho? Well, the last house that burned to the ground in Boise, Idaho was back in 1957. We buy insurance, but boys and girls, not very many houses burned to the ground. Just take a look around in your neighborhood. When was the last time you had a house burned to the ground? Every one of them's got fire insurance. What for? Makes fire insurance companies rich and makes us poorer. Not poor, but poorer. And you don't need it. So when a house burns down, the Amish people come over. We had this happen here. A tornado came through, knocked this guy's Amish house down, and all the Amish guys came over, salvaged everything that they could on one day, and came over the next day and built him a new house. In one day. The only people in America that can do that. They can build a house or a barn in one day. About, I don't know, 50, 100 of them come over and built this guy a house. How many Amish guys got their houses knocked down in the tornado? How many Amish guys have tornado insurance? None. Zero. The hell do they need insurance for? Once in a while, an Amish house burns down, and the Amish people come over and build him a new house the next day. Other than a little inconvenience, it's no big deal. And all the Amish people come over, and they donate the boards, you know, that go into it. So the guy whose house burned down, he doesn't even pay for it. Doesn't even pay for it. And that's called charity. And the other Amish guys, and they don't pay any insurance. And they don't need to. You take all the Amish people with all the insurance premiums that they save. It's hundreds of houses. Three houses burn down every year. And they come up and build those three houses. And they save those hundreds of houses of insurance premiums and put it in their own pockets. And that's just one law. You know, if Americans all practiced strict liability instead of limited liability, we would all be better drivers, because you'd have to buy every kid you kill. And if you didn't, we'd bore a hole through your ear and sell you to the aggrieved parents whose kid you killed, who would require either, one, that you work it off and pay them, or two, that you be stoned to death because we practice an eye for an eye, wound for wound, stripe for stripe, and life for life. You want to know how to stop drunk drivers? Every time a drunk driver kills somebody, you take him out and stone him to death. That's what the law of God requires. Drunk driver kills a kid in the school zone, and we take the drunk driver out and we stone him to death. And there's only two possible conclusions when you get to the end of it. At the end of the day, boys and girls, either one, there are no more drunks left because we stoned them all. They're all dead. There are no more drunk drivers in America. Every drunk driver in America has been killed. There's none. Therefore, there's no more drunk drivers. Therefore, there are no more drunk driving deaths. See how simple that is? Or, the other conclusion is you stone a few of them and the rest of them wake up to reality and stop driving drunk. I mean, you know, it's six of one, half dozen the other. Now, the law of God is aimed at solving the problem. But, hey, listen, your kinder, gentler promotion here, you know, of get drunk drivers off the road, all that has created is a $2 billion a year slush fund for lawyers to defend drunk drivers. You don't have any drunk drivers off the road. The drunk drivers are paying two, three, four times as much for insurance. I got one working right here, right now, on the farm. He's a convicted drunk driver. He's got his driver's license. He just pays a lot more in insurance premiums, that's all. He's just an ordinary, everyday, garden variety drunk with a driver's license. He hadn't killed anybody yet. And, you know, God really doesn't care if you drive drunk or sober. He just wants you to buy every kid you kill. You got to be responsible for your actions. I know it's a wild new concept, but I thought I'd share it with you. If everybody in America practiced the laws of God, you'd have a different society. You wouldn't have any banks. You wouldn't have any paper money. You wouldn't have any debt. You wouldn't have any interest. You would own your home free and clear. You know that? That's right. You'd own your home free and clear right now. You'd own your automobile free and clear. You would be debt free, paying no child support, no alimony. The divorce rate in America was 8 per 100,000 marriages in 1900. Today, the divorce rate is 67%. For practical purposes, you would have no divorce and no juvenile delinquents. I mean, you'd have a wild new society here, practicing the Ten Commandments and the law of God. And we couldn't have that. It would bankrupt our economy. All right, let me give you a final reminder. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Talking about the law of Moses. So until then, thanks for listening and good night, friends.